It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining the program today is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Kevin Wooster, Rapid City reporter for KELO-TV. And Kevin, welcome to the program as well.
Good to be back, Carl.
Well, South Dakota's U.S. Senate race is receiving national attention as a contest that was considered safely Republican, now seen as closer than expected. The New York Times and even the Colbert Report have been covering the race. Big names are coming here. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin was here yesterday endorsing Democrat Rick Wyland. Former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum was in Rapid City endorsing Mike Rounds, and Mike Huckabee attends a Rounds rally on Friday in Sioux Falls. And John Hunter, are you surprised at how this race has evolved?
Well, in a way, yes, although I think and Kevin and I had talked during this summer that they thought there would be a push after Labor Day, and probably relating to some EB5 stuff, and I think that's taken place. But I think it's probably gotten closer than I would have expected, looking back a few months.
How about for you, Kevin?
I think it's gotten a little closer than I might have expected, if the polling that we see is any indication. I think you said closer than expected, and that probably is about where I see it. I would still consider Mike Rounds to be the guy that's the candidate to beat in this race. He still has money, and he's getting help from other entities. So it's closer than I'd expected it to be, although I think once Pressler got in, I think some possibilities opened up, and we're seeing those possibilities develop.
Some of the polls, there's the Survey USA poll put to Rounds at 35%, Larry Pressler at 32%, Rick Wyland at 28%. There's also the Harper Polling Survey that has come out, and I think that's a Republican firm. Rounds 37% there, Wyland 33%, Pressler at 23%, and Gordon Howey at 5%. John Hunter, how much attention can we pay to these polls? How accurate do you think these are at this stage?
Well, I never put a lot of stock in them. As you mentioned, there's a Republican poll or whatever that they're either phrased or they're somehow going to favor the candidate that they're supporting. But I do think that if you take them as a group and look at both sides, you'd probably get a decent picture. The one you mentioned, the Survey USA with Larry Pressler at 32%, I think is as high as I've seen him all along, and which really I think would be kind of astounding if that's true.
What about for you, Kevin Wooster, looking at these polls?
Well, the Survey USA poll, was done by some media outlets. My understanding is there's some questions that some people have with the methodology there, but the intent certainly I would consider to be the cleanest of any of the polls, and that is the media folks are just trying to figure out what's going on. And I'm always suspicious of anything released by one side or the other, regardless of the professional nature of the polling company, just because these folks don't usually release information unless they think it's good for them. And so I assume that the Survey USA poll that showed Pressler at 32% was a pretty decent snapshot in time, and that's all it was. And then it kind of reflects a polling rise that he had in other polls as well. And obviously, both sides believe that he's a serious factor at this point because they're both hitting him pretty hard. So,
well, if Larry Pressler is surging, as these polls suggest, John Hunter, why do you think that is?
Well, I think, I've thought this for a long time, that so many of these races for Congress involved people from each party who are pretty loyal to that party, the very conservative and the more liberal candidates, and Pressler is positioning himself as the moderate in this case, which is where I actually think most voters are. I think most voters look at both candidates and like some things about one and not so other. They tend not to be as vocal or maybe even contribute as much, which I think is what skews some of these candidates farther to the outsides. But I think it's possible, at least, that the moderate nature, or at least how Larry is trying to position himself in the middle, is appealing to some South Dakotans.
Kevin Wooster, do you agree that positioning himself as a moderate is what is helping Larry Pressler?
I think he has a centrist message. He's getting support from centrist organizations. He's a senatorial-looking guy. Obviously, he was one for three terms in the U.S. Senate. I think people had voted for him before and maybe changed their minds near the end of his career because of some negative press and media that he got, some of it legitimate, maybe some of it exaggerated, have forgotten some of that, although they're being reminded of some of it now, which is the price of rising in the polls. And he speaks I've heard that from several people. He speaks something from the middle that they've been wanting to hear, and they're not convinced, at least a certain segment of the voting public in South Dakota, they're not convinced that either Mike Rounds, and of course Gordon Howey, who would be far to the right, or Rick Weiland can give them that middle perspective.
Do you think some of Larry Pressler's past positions when he was senator and even stories about his residencies in New York and D.C., do you think things like that could hurt him with those voters who are looking for a moderate candidate, John?
Well, it seems to be the way these play out. You may remember when Tim Johnson defeated him in his last Senate race, that's kind of what it was. And voters in South Dakota tend to we tend to elect these folks at very young ages. All these candidates we're talking about were elected in their 30s. Pressler, I mean, you can say Munt, McGovern, Johnson, Daschle, and so on. But then once you get to a point where you think that they're not us anymore, they're part of Washington, then that's about the time that they're taken out, and they did that against Daschle, that he was a D.C. resident. You might remember that commercial and the limousine Larry they had a deal on because he was taking limousines around the city or something like that. So as Kevin said, that's kind of the price for rising in the polls is then they start digging out this stuff and kind of indicating that you're not one of us. But I don't know if that really resonates or not. I can't really tell if voters care about that so much as they do about other things.
Well, Kevin Wooster, you mentioned Gordon Howey, who's running as an independent. What role do you see him playing in this race?
Well, I think he chips away a little bit at the people on the conservative end of the spectrum that Mike Rounds might get otherwise. It's a question of how much he chips away. I certainly, from the start, have never seen him rising much beyond 5%. I suppose it's possible that he could, but depending how close the race gets, 5 or 6% or 4%, or one poll I think showed Gordon as high as 8%, is somewhere in there is a percentage number that could make a difference if it's a close race. So I think you'll see some things that would see Mike Rounds trying to shore up his conservative credentials.
Do you think the endorsements from Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee would help with those conservative credentials for Mike Rounds?
I think that's helpful, and my understanding is that the Tea Party Express is going to be in town today and that they may have some words of support for, the National Tea Party Express, the bus tour from that conservative PAC. If, as Rounds, as people seem to believe will happen, they endorse him, that's interesting because Gordon Howey is kind of the father of the Tea Party in South Dakota, at least western South Dakota. And that would be a fairly significant endorsement to Mike Rounds from the conservative side.
John Hunter, do you see any dangers in bringing big names in the state for endorsement, whether it's Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee for Mike Rounds or Tom Harkin and others for Rick Weiland?
I don't think so. I don't think there's danger in that. It's probably only good unless there's someone who has a real controversial stand or a background. I mean, you could have, and I can't think of one right now unless, I just can't think of any who might be. Sarah Palin, maybe if she came out that she might be polarizing enough. But I don't really see any danger of bringing the names into the state for endorsements.
In looking at the Mike Rounds campaign, he was seen, I think, by most as pretty much a shoe-in to win. Do you think the controversy surrounding the EB-5 program is what has been hurting him, Kevin Wooster? Do you think there's other things going on as well?
Well, I think EB-5 certainly had an impact. I've talked to a couple of people that aren't exactly sure even all the inside details of it, but they just have a sense that they don't feel good about it. And there seems to be some indication in the polling that that's having an effect. I don't know how much of an effect it has. I think there's still generally a trust to factor there for Mike Rounds in his core voting group, and he's getting some help now from outside PACs that aren't just beating up Pressler and Weiland, but they're also running some positive ads for Mike Rounds, you know, which you tend to see. You do the hammering of the opponent to hammer, and then as you get close to the election, you see more and more of just the good stuff of the candidate that you're supporting. So he has several that are coming in on his behalf. So I would say that that's going to help that. I guess the question is, what more is there to come out of the EB5 issue prior to the November 4th election, and is there another shoe that's going to drop?
Bob Mercer has a report that deals with the EB5 program, had Yoak Ballin's deposition and litigation that explains somewhat how the whole program became privatized, and that seems to be pointing a finger at the governor's office. Do you think something like that, John Hunter, is that other shoe, or do you think there's just this issue is still so complex with all these different webs going on that it's hard to just point it all at one person?
Well, I think it is modestly complicated, and probably even the Democratic statewide party, which is kind of banking on this for a lot of their strategy for a variety of races, probably didn't even expect this to keep gaining momentum late in the campaign season. You know, they thought, well, let's bring this up, and that's that. But there does seem to be a variety of different things that go with that. I don't know if, you know, voters, when you talk to them, they'll sometimes say, no, that doesn't matter to me at all. That's not a factor in this race. Others will say, yeah, well, I, maybe he's not, you know, Rounds was involved in that, and it doesn't play very well. So I don't know if this thing that Bob is writing about is going to be one more step in that path, or if it's going to be something else ignored by the voters.
Kevin Wooster, do you think the Senate race has maybe because of the EB-5 program, turned away from issues and is more about the person or the personalities or the characters?
I think it certainly has to a certain extent, and that happens. You know, I've kind of gone back and forth with the campaign about some Obamacare stuff and some details, and they've tried to get back to me on that, and I've tried to get to it for some blogging, but EB-5 has been such a factor, and once it starts to seem to have an effect in the voting public, then I think media and obviously the campaigns pay attention to it. I think the problem that you have is there are two tacks you can take here on trying to attack Mike Rounds from campaign standpoint. One is that he was culpable, actually criminally culpable, and I think you saw the Democratic Party take that approach. To me, that's a harder one to sell. I think the voters are more likely to believe in South Dakota that he was maybe negligent or his oversight wasn't what it should have been. Now, just the fact that you raise the possibility of a criminal violation, I think, obviously makes some headlines and causes some furor and probably has a negative impact. But to me, the larger question I think most voters look at is, did he fail somehow in his responsibility as governor to oversee this, and would that affect his ability to be an effective U.S. senator?
And moving from Mike Rounds and Larry Pressler, John Hunter, what do you think it would take for Rick Weiland in these last few weeks to overtake them, or at least move past Mike Rounds?
Well, I think there's going to have to be an appeal a little bit to the middle that, you know, in a Republican state, you know, with more Republican voters than Democrat voters, then Rick is going to have to get independents and some Republicans to vote for him, and even if he gets all the Democrats, which he probably would. So I think there would be something from the middle, but I think he has to draw voters from the middle, and those might be the ones that Larry Pressler is picking up at the moment. But I think that's part of what he needs to pick up. On the other hand, if you have a three-way race, they're splitting it so far, you may not... You know, you may not need 45% to win that race.
What are your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Well, this is still Mike Rounds' race to lose. I mean, you know, we talk about the others rise in the poll, but the simple truth is Mike Rounds is the one that sits at worst 35%. I think most people practically don't feel like he's dipped much below that, which is what he needs to win. And and the other guys have been trying to get up to 30 for quite a while. So, I mean, he's still the guy that's in the lead, and it's still up to them to figure out a way to take those percentage points that they need away from him. And it's a tough thing at this point because, you know, there are only so many out there, and if you've got Presser running around 25%, Weiland at 25 to 30, and Weiland at 25 to 30, and Round sitting at 35 to 40, if that's where he is, then whatever Weiland or Gordon Howie has, it's not like there's another 30% out there that you can bring in. You got to take other people's support into your own, and that can be difficult. And the Republicans in South Dakota tend to be, the core Republican group tends to be pretty loyal, and some of them tend to come home at election time more maybe than other voting groups do. So they've got a lot of work ahead of them.
Well, you know, Carl, yeah, I want to bring up one other thing with that, too, and that is there are, I think, relatively low, and it emphasizes what Kevin is saying, on undecideds in this race. And if you remember the 10 years ago with Daschle and Thune, there were very few undecideds. And so, as Kevin has indicated, you got to go get votes. You got to convince someone who already has decided to change their mind. You know, if each of these guys had 20%, and that's 60%, you had 40% undecided. It's a different campaign. But with low undecideds, it's harder to get to move that needle.
Well, we should mention that there's a couple of other statewide races, and tomorrow SDPB-TV is hosting a debate with Republican Congresswoman Kristi Noem and Democrat challenger Karina Robinson. Looking at that race, Kevin Wooster, has Karina Robinson made much of an impact with voters?
I think she has developed as a candidate, and I think she's a stronger, more forceful candidate right now than she was 6 months ago or a year ago, obviously. But it's a pretty tough hill that she's got to climb at this point. I've suggested to her in conversations that she's running a four-year campaign if she's really serious about it, and this first 2 years is to establish herself and develop a fundraising base, and the next 2 years would be to really make some gains. And of course, anything could happen now, but as I think I've said in a blog or two, that the Noem folks have to like this EB5 stuff because she's pretty much completely out of it, and she can kind of just sit back and watch all the heavy artillery being fired on that issue and not much of it at herself. But Karina Robinson was forceful yesterday, forceful to the point of calling Kristi Noem a hypocrite over government shutdown votes, and so she's obviously, you know, reaching a point where she's a more powerful candidate than she was, still a very much a decided underdog candidate.
And for you, John Hunter, what do you expect to come out of this debate tomorrow?
Well, I think it'll be informative. I think it'll pay off for voters if they listen to it, because I think both candidates have developed their message pretty well. You know, the favor always lies with the incumbent, and you can talk about national issues a little more clearly because you've kind of been living them every day for the last number of years. But I'd love to see both candidates define themselves as thoughtful candidates who are not going to simply hand their vote over to the party and vote in the manner of which the leadership tells them. I'd love to see them each take positions, at least one position that would be different from their party, and say, I'm a South Dakotan first, and I'm representing you, and see how the voters listen to that.
Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week, and John, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Carl.
And Kevin, thanks for joining us as well.
You bet. See you guys.